Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
I'm Branham, he's Blank, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Astros are hot. Astros are red hot. I'm not sure what's hotter, Alex Bregman, the Astros, or Hansel. One of those three, red hot right now.
What was the third one?
The Zoolanders. Is it Hansen or Hansel? I always forget. Hansel.
It's Hansel.
It's Hansel. It
Hansel.
Is Hansel. I was
Hansel,
right. Yeah, Hansel.
He's so hot right now.
So hot right now, Hansel.
I'm not familiar.
You've never seen Zoolander?
I have. It was awful.
I disagree.
I couldn't stomach the entire
thing. I feel like derailing the show over that take.
Yeah, I'm not a...
We've talked about this before. I've just never been a fan of that entire movie.
Yeah. You're not much of a...
I heard you guys on the way home.
Cinema... Yeah. Well, I knew you did. You're not much of a cinema guy, though.
I used to be.
I appreciate good cinema, and Zoolander is good cinema. No, Zoolander's the only... Like, I usually don't appreciate that kind of humor. I usually don't like that kind of humor. I usually don't like stupid humor. That's one of the very few stupid humor movies that I actually like. I couldn't make it through Zoolander 2. Like, that one was atrocious.
That one was awful. Yeah. That one was awful.
Did you like Zoolander, Napoleon Dynamite?
Hate it.
Me too.
Hate it. Yeah. No, that humor is usually not for me. It's usually not. That's one of the very, very few that is. Do like me some Zoolander. So Hansel's hot. Bregman's hot. Astros are hot. What'd you think of the Astros locking up another series, 7-1 on a 9-game road trip with a chance to go for back-to-back sweeps today?
I just loved it. I loved everything about it, from Kikuchi and Bregman. And the fact that you just got, you know, you got everything again for another game. You literally could be undefeated on this road trip, if not for the one that got away the first game in Arlington. But yet, we talked about it yesterday. The fact that everything is synced up right now, it's always been one or the other for the most part, except for the little stretch that got them to make up ground in the division. Now it just seems like everything's clicking again. It's the offense. It's the power. It's the pitching. Everything is, except for Ryan Pressly, everything is falling into place right now again for this team. And then when you least expect it, when we looked at the schedule and thought, well, the Tigers are playing the Mariners, that's going to be a cakewalk for the Mariners. Tigers are doing you some solids too. And it was a good night.
Yeah, never doubt A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch, he can win baseball games. And he appreciates and admires the Astros, so he's going to do the Astros a solid no matter what. Yeah, yesterday was a good game. I mean, Kikuchi, to me, the lead story, even though the Bregman homers for another game, 4 games in a row now for Alex Bregman. Kikuchi was good again. Like, he was good. Was it a great start? I don't think that any of his 3 starts have been, like, over-the-top great, but they've all been good to really good. And the Astros are 3-0 whenever Yusei Kikuchi is on the mound. And as a critic of the trade, which, let's put the brakes a little bit, but of a critic of the trade, I was questioning how much it improved the Astros in 2024. That is the one thing I'll look back at and say, okay, well, this improves the Astros in 2024 by quite a bit because Yusei Kikuchi does fill out this rotation and makes this rotation 5 deep. When Verlander comes back, hopefully 6 deep. He gives you a chance to win every single game. He's going to get you to the middle innings of the game. Kikuchi's been really, really stinking good with the Astros in 3 starts in a row.
Yeah, when we talked about who won the trade, it's going to be analyzed after the time has passed and we see the long-term ramifications of everybody that was involved in it. But you knew at the time Kikuchi had better stuff, more experience than Bloss, because Bloss just probably should not have been up this early in his career, for coming up from Double A and then getting thrown into the starting rotation and then asked to try and, you know, win games for you at a time when you sorely needed it. Kikuchi has been fantastic. Whether it's been any correlation with Miller and Murphy and or the rest of the sequencing things, kind of some of the things we talked about yesterday, just what the doctor ordered, fit right into the rotation. You don't have to like be uneasy when you see the back end of the rotation coming up in a series. And he's done exactly what you needed him to do.
Yeah, fun to see that. Brian Abreu does his thing, comes in the sixth inning, and then gets you all three outs in the seventh. He's been giving you an inning and a third sporadically throughout the entire season. He's a weapon in that role. He was really good, struck out a pair, got a little bit of help defensively, but did not allow a base runner. And Ryan Pressly stressing me out. That was a hard eighth inning to watch. It was a nerve-wracking eighth inning to watch. Pressly gives up a run, was able to hold the lead, though. Gave up half of the lead, but held the lead. That's becoming an issue again with Ryan Pressly. Like, he had that 15 games in a row or whatever it was where he didn't allow a run. Now Presley's starting to look like early season Pressly again, and I'm starting to get a bit worried about it.
As well you should. I mean, I was watching it with my oldest daughter last night, and she's like, "Dad, why are you, like, clenching your fist and getting a little bit agitated?"
How old is your oldest daughter now?
Eight, going to be nine at the end of the month.
She's the voice of reason.
Yeah, and she's. I love the fact that she's into the games with me and wants to watch them. And she's like, "What's the deal?" And I'm like, "Ryan Pressly, he's not getting anybody out." When Morel hit that ball down the third baseline, mm-hmm. I thought, "Oh God, there goes the lead. It's all over." Because you even in the 3-2 count was excruciating. With every pitch, I'm like, "He's going to walk him. He's just going to end up trying to throw a breaking pitch or a fastball he can't locate on the outside." And thankfully, they got out of that inning. But that's basically the only negative I think there is to complain about last night.
Yeah, I want to see Abreu jump Pressly on the leverage chart. Sometimes it's still going to be the seventh inning, but I want Abreu to face the tougher pocket. Presley's annoying me. I didn't realize that Presley's given up a run in each of his last four appearances. So he had 15 in a row where he doesn't give up a run, and now he's had four in a row where he does give up a run. An ERA of 9 in his last four appearances. And the FIP guys, the FIP Warriors, not going to be too happy with his FIP. A 7.18 FIP. People are going to lose their mind about his FIP. Not too happy about that. And then Hader was fantastic. Hader, 3 up, 3 down. Locks down 26 saves in a row. I think it took longer for them to fix the mound in the decrepit Tropicana field than it did for him to make easy work of the Rays in the ninth inning.
Yeah, look, I mean, as crazy as that was, the outcome was just what you wanted to see. And as much as we talked about Hader a week or so ago, look, I mean, he's locating all of his pitches. His fastball looks good. He's putting it places. Guys aren't catching up to it. So, again, nothing to complain about at all besides Ryan Pressly and the fact that, you know, you hope that you're another day closer with another win to getting some of the guys back at a certain point that can maybe even help you even more when you start talking about Tucker, Verlander, et cetera.
I'm a Hader guy. I like Hader. I think we underappreciate Hader. We're like, oh, my goodness, $19 million for a 3.61 ERA. Oh, do you see how many losses he's given or he has? Do you see how many homers he's given up? The dude's had 26 straight saves. He's a closer. What is his job? To save the game, to rack up saves. Whenever he's called upon to do his job, he's been nearly perfect. He's 26 of 27. He's 26 in a row. Most of in history of the Astros franchise. Josh Hader, in his first season, has done something that no other relief pitcher has done in franchise history. And it's his job. Save the game. Now, outside of safe situations, he's been a bit shaky, but he's also been open-minded to pitch outside of safe situations. He's gone multi-innings. He's gone multi-days in a row. I appreciate the heck out of Josh Hader. I feel like he's actually underappreciated in this city. He's been fantastic for the—I mean, he's had some moments outside of non-safe situations that have been a little bit hairy. But whenever he's called upon to do his job, he's been great. Almost perfect, in fact.
Yeah, we've had that discussion. He does— When we talk about things that make me worry, sometimes he's still, the eye test says he puts guys on base, he's giving up home runs.
He's got an under one whip.
I understand, and we can go into that all again if you'd like.
Let's do it.
But my big thing is the fact that, you know, and we talked about the people analyze him because of the fact that, you know, he's making that much money, so people are going to be even harder on him. But would I like it to be a little cleaner sometimes? Sure. But is he getting the job done? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we pay him for, right? It's what the Astros pay him for, right? To get saves. And he's done that with the exception of the first game he appeared in. better than anybody. It looks like you have something to say, Brian.
I think saves are an overrated. Like, I don't disagree with what you said about Josh Hader. Mm-hmm. I think he's been fantastic and better than maybe a lot of us have given credit for. I just hate the save stat as a metric for grading performance because, I mean, you could come in with a 3-run lead, give up, you know, a couple of home runs, and you still get the save. Yeah. It's just, like, looking at only the saves, to me, doesn't tell the whole story because it doesn't tell what the situation really was. I mean, some guy comes in with facing 3-4-5 with a 1-run lead is different than facing 7-8-9 with a 3-run lead.
Completely agree. It's a good point. Now, does this FIP interest you?
No,
are you
I don't like
FIP
either.
Guy?
I don't like FIP. No, the home run only thing is I don't like grading off of that. Yeah.
If you haven't noticed, I hate FIP. But 26 straight save, he's the man. Bregman on another level. 4 straight games with a home run. He mixed in a double there, too. Had a nice sliding play in foul territory. Making himself a lot of money, I think. I think he's making himself
making
a ton
Scott
of money.
Scott Boris a bunch of money, too.
Scott Boris is loving what he's watching from Alex Bregman in the month of August. Bregman's getting hot. He's having a hot boy summer. Yeah. He's been fantastic.
We talked about it. I think you're right. And I think you said it and you tweeted it. He's pricing himself out of the Astros' range. At a certain point, he's already jumped up past Chapman. He's going to be a very sought-after commodity for teams that need a third baseman. Someone's going to offer him way more than I think in years and money than the Astros are willing to consider.
Yeah.
And he's going to go somewhere else.
And some teams' fan base is going to be really pissed in April and May when he starts off slow again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can't wait for that.
No, I mean, the Astros should absolutely monitor the Bregman situation in the offseason. But you're going to monitor it to that line in the sand, that number that you're willing to go to. And then as soon as they come back with an offer that's way above that, you're like, okay, we're out. If you want to get back down to our number, then we'll talk. So certainly you monitor the Bregman situation. I just don't think it's feasible. A few weeks ago, I said that Yiner Diaz is the most important player for the Astros while Kyle Tucker is out because they're not going to pitch to Yordan. And we've seen that. Like either it's intentional walks with runners on base, intentional walks without first base open. Anytime there's a runner in scoring position, Yordan's coming up. They're not giving him anything to hit. Yiner Diaz leads the Houston Astros in RBIs, ladies and gentlemen. Dusty Baker would love this because Dusty Baker was a huge, I got to have an RBI guy in the middle of the order. Jeff Bagwell at the start of the year, we paid Jose Abreu to be a guy who drives in runs. Well, Yiner Diaz is the guy that is doing that. Who would have had Yiner Diaz leading this team in RBIs? He's been critical for this team. It's been awesome to see, and I love that he's coming into his own as a young hitter in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think the progression has been fantastic because as much as we saw last season, the expectations were set way too high when he came into the year in terms of trying to put 162 to the correlation of what he did last year and then say that he was going to have all these home runs and all this production. But we were talking a few weeks ago about the fact that his power numbers were down, but now all of a sudden the power numbers are coming back. He's doing everything you need him to do, and he's become a must-have in the middle of your lineup for this team. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, fun to watch Yiner. Yiner's been very, very good. What did you think of him at first base defensively?
Well, I'll tell you what, that play that he made in the eighth behind Presley was fantastic. He threw his body in front of it, made sure he kept it in front of him, got the out there. I had no problems. There's little things that you can nitpick sometime with his stretch and things. But overall, I think it's going to only get better. And when you keep that bat in the lineup and have a place for him other than catcher right there, I'm all good with it.
Yeah, I thought he looked pretty good. There was 3 plays that I highlighted where I thought 2 of them were good. 1 of them was not good. Just before I get into those 3, I thought his footwork was not good at first base. Right. Catching balls from infielders. Like that left foot is already stepping towards the baseball before the baseball is even in flight. Like that's first base 101. Like you step when you see the ball in flight, takes you to the ball. I think he needs some work there. But it's his first game that he's played there this year. He played there 8 times last year, 7 starts. So that's to be expected. That's an area that I think they will clean up, and he's a good enough athlete to be able to do that in relatively short time. I'm sure they're watching film with him today saying, hey, this is an area where you need to clean up. I thought he could have picked the Jeremy Pena throw, that hard grounder up the middle. People are like, oh, that's a terrible throw by Pena. A lot of times infielders try to one-hop it. It's easier to control. It keeps you from airmailing, especially on a play where you're diving or it's a tough throw, a deep throw. And Pena does that a lot. Now, he doesn't do it all that well, but Pena a lot of times will do the one-hop to the first baseman. So that was kind of by design, I believe. A diving play took him up the middle. The ball was a rocket, so it kind of carried him into center field a bit. He's spinning a throw to first base. I think Pena was trying to one-hop it there. He's done it plenty of times, and that's kind of infielder 101. I thought it was an easy pick. I thought it was an easy pick, and Yiner flat out whiffed.
Yeah, I figured that would be on your list because of the fact that, I think that that's something that, especially on turf, that's what infielders do. I mean, if they're caused to go and react a certain way. They know they can pick up speed and get a better throw if they're able to skip it off the turf. I think that that's something that Jeremy Peña probably didn't even think twice about, no matter who was over there. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things that from a Yiner Diaz perspective, if you haven't been playing first base all year in his case, but you haven't played it that frequently, that's something that is a tough adjust sometimes because it does skip on you when it comes off the turf.
And look, we're nitpicking because it's the first time we've seen him there. I do like him there. And then you brought up the play in the eighth inning. The ball was like maybe the ball kind of caught him more than he knocked down the ball because that ball was a rocket off of Pena's bat or off of Lau's bat. But a good play. Like you made the play. You made the play, got the at first, and it really preserved the lead there because that gets by you, at least ties the game, probably later in the inning, gives the Rays the lead. So that was a big play there. And then I thought the final out of the game was a nice play by Yiner. It was a ground ball to the right side. The other low hit it. Yiner ranges way over. And then, it was more the range that was impressive to me, not so much the flip. That was nice, I thought. I thought Yiner covered a lot of ground there with a ball that was in the hole. Like, a lot of times, first baseman will go too far when it's an easy play by a second baseman. I thought Yiner played that one really nicely.
No, yeah, I was just trying to remember the play specifically because, now that you mentioned it, the thing that brought to my attention was it looked like Hader sprained his ankle.
It did.
He hit the base funky.
Yeah, I was worried.
And then the guys were kind of looking at him like, "You okay, bro?" And I'm going, "Well, the last thing you need right now is to have him have something happen to his ankle when they're rolling and he's been shutting the door." But that's what I was paying attention to most. But you're right. I mean, look, the fact that he got away from the baseline, because you're protecting the baseline again, but he gets away, makes a play, makes the flip on time. It's nice to see that he's serviceable at first base already, and I think it's only going to get better.
I'm glad you were very concerned about the underappreciated Josh Hader's ankle at first base. All right, 713-780-3776. What's the BMAC graph up to, by the way, Brian? Was last week you were at 10%? The Astros made the playoffs?
I was 15, and then I moved 15. Monday I said 35.
They're a game and a half up on Seattle. Earlier today, so Kansas City now has a game lead on the Astros, just in case they were to fall out of the lead in the American League West. Where's BMAC graph at?
Look, I think I very much live in the moment, and right now they're dominating on the road, so I've got no choice but to react accordingly, and I'm going to move it up above 50%. I'm going to say 55%
now. Oh, wow. Brian's above a coin flip chance for the Astros to make the playoffs.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
This roadie for the Astros. Pulling Brian back in. All right, 713-780-3776. We'll get your thoughts on the Astros' Game 2 win over the Rays yesterday. A busy show, it always is. What's C.J. Stroud's best attribute? Is Stephon Diggs the biggest diva in the NFL? And there's a lot of people on the street saying the Astros won the Kikuchi trade. All on tap for today's show. But when we come back, I'm starting to like Joe Espada. And the reason is very, very simple. 713-780-ESPN. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
ESPN975. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Starting to like Espada. I've been halfway in, 1 foot in, maybe 5 toes down, but I'm liking him more and more. I'll tell you why in a moment. 0754, yay, it's Triple B time. Compliments do nothing. Not for the show, at least. We do mean text, not nice text. Nice text would be a very boring segment. Just kind of had that realization. Hey, you guys are great, says 8321 1438. Oh, I love the Bees. I don't think it's as entertaining as
As you read them, though. Yeah.
8234, Will Wagner had 3 hits in his debut for Toronto, flashed the leather some too. Yeah, I'm a little worried about that. That guy can rake.
Low profita, though. Not great.
No, right, but all it takes is one.
All it takes is one.
And Wagner has been, 2 games in, I think, is the greatest second baseman of all time. 2 games in.
Certainly better numbers than Kevin Biggio was for Toronto.
Numbers back. Yeah,
no doubt about that. I mean, he's got a long way to go to keep all that up, to keep doing what he's doing. But you're right. All it takes is one, and they have the chance to have two, and who knows what Joey Loperfido turns into, but I think Blossel eventually will be a serviceable starter. I'm waiting to see the power from Wagner, but nice start.
I don't need him. I mean, if he's Luis Arraez.
You get three hits every day. Who
I don't
cares?
Need the power. Power would be nice, absolutely. But if you're Luis Arraez, I'd take that. 7230, who would you rather have on the bump for a playoff game this postseason, Kikuchi or JV? If I'm making the call today, I'm going Kikuchi. Yeah. If I'm making the decision today, I'm going Kikuchi.
I'm going to go Verlander just because of the experience. And I'm going to roll with that. But I'm not going to crap on Kikuchi because since he's been here, he's done everything that you've asked him to do.
You going Clemens or Kikuchi?
Kikuchi.
Like, I mean, that's, yeah. Like Kirk Clemens today?
I mean, Clemens got a ton of experience.
Okay. Smart ass. I just think that Verlander's still going to be more than fine as a pitcher if he comes back.
Bregman is a weird case because I've never seen a devoted student of the game slump as long as he does. This dude stays on the iPad and working on his craft, but slumps more often than not. How does that happen? It is weird because he is a student of the game. He's always working on his swing. He'll have a couple of months where he's atrocious, and then he'll have a couple of months where he's the best player in baseball. Like, it's weird.
Pacing himself?
No, I don't think it's that.
I'm trying to give him an excuse. No. I don't know.
I think he gets lost at times.
Maybe he overanalyzes and then probably. He simplifies down the stretch?
Probably. But when he finds it, he's great. It's like Tiger. Yeah. Not calling Bregman, you know, the greatest ever like Tiger was. But Tiger was winning the Masters by 28 shots and then is changing his swing.
Yeah.
It's like they're always tinkering. It's like if you're the best in the game, not saying that Bregman is, but if you're finding relative success and good success, why tinker? Like ride that for a bit. And then once you start to slump a little bit, then start working on the swing a little bit.
Probably a little bit of an obsession with him and the fact that he does delve so far, so deep. Remember we were talking about everything at the start of the year from the weight that he gained to the fact that is he going to try and, you know, change the bat angle to try and drive more balls out of the park. And then it is crazy that normally when a guy that traditionally starts slower than he's ever started before, that you start questioning, is he ever going to be able to get it back? Now, not only has he got it back, but he's on quite a heater right now.
Yeah. Ocho, if you're going to defend a spot of pulling Kikuchi with two outs and no imminent danger, we need to have a discussion because that was bad word. That's not the reason that I'm liking a spotter right now, but we can chat about that. I thought it was a good pull by a spotter. Yes, no imminent danger, but the tying run is coming to the plate. And would you rather have Kikuchi, who's at 93 pitches, or a fully rested Brian Abreu? Like, if you're looking for an out in that situation, you're going Kikuchi with 93 pitches, or Abreu, who's had a couple of days and is ready to go? And then Abreu struck the dude out. So, like, hindsight 2020 here, it also favors the hook.
I think when it's the eye test on everything. When you see that he's in the 90s on his pitch count, and you see that he's not commanding the zone as much as he was earlier in the game, and like you said, and the tying run is coming to the plate, I'm going to take a fresh arm that's been in those situations that I believe in and just tip my cap and say, we don't want you to lose this game. You did your job. Go sit down, and we got a guy that's going to clean it up for you.
And I'm a firm believer in a batter too early versus a batter too late, too. Firm believer in that, especially when you have the bullpen that you do. Like, if it was Fromber versus Brian King, then that's a different conversation. But whenever it's Kikuchi versus Brian Abreu, I'm getting Kikuchi out a batter too early versus a batter too late. It might be different if it's Fromber King, and that's the conversation we're having. 3209, with the Astros offer Bregman $100 million for 3 years. That's 33.3333, repeating, of course. That's a little high on the AAV.
Yeah, I said yesterday I'll stick to it. I don't think they're going to go over 30. And the years make sense. The dollars there don't for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you could get that at 30 and below, I think they'd consider it.
If they were to sign Bregman for 100 for three, I would grimace like this and be like, okay, fine. At least it's only 3 years. I believe it's too high. It's more than I would pay. But if the Astros do it, hey, it's Jim Crane's money, not mine. Now, I would hope that it wouldn't restrict them from doing other things with the finances. So, yes, I would live with that, but it's higher than the number that I would want to throw out there. So the reason that I'm starting to like Joe Espada more, it's simple, really. He's starting to do things I've been telling him to do. He's doing things that I should be managing the Houston Astros. Joe Espada, the most interesting manager in the world, and he's becoming more and more interesting because he's listening to the Bees and he's listening to Branham. He did two things in yesterday's game that I've been begging him to do all year, and people have been calling me, oh, it's not a big deal. He's never going to do that stuff. He's not a first baseman, blah, 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 blah. He did two different things yesterday in the game that I've been wanting him to do forever. Play Yiner at first base, finally did that, and I would lose my mind. It triggered me way more than it should. Whenever he had Chaz and Mauricio Dubon both playing corner outfield, he would play Chaz in right and Dubon in left field, right. And it would drive me crazy. Why? Because Chaz has a noodle for an arm, and Mauricio Dubon at least has a strong arm. It might not be the most accurate arm, but at least it's a strong arm. And again, baseball 101, where do you put the stronger arm? If everything else is equal, left field, right field, where do you put the stronger arm? You put it in right field. It would drive me crazy when Espada would play Chaz in right, Dubon in left. It's like, well, you're punting a good arm, and then you're putting a terrible arm in the position where you need a strong arm. He finally changed it yesterday. He had Dubon in right, Chaz in left field. I applaud Joe Espada for having the same amount of brilliance that Branham does. Great job, Joe.
Acknowledge me.
Fantastic job.
Yeah,
I'm liking this guy.
I really loved the first move. The fact that we saw Yiner at first base finally, the fact that he was finally, well, I don't know what the hang-up was, but the fact that you put Yiner at first base and he proved to you now that he can play that whenever you need him to play that, I think that's a fantastic move for this team going forward. We talked about how important, especially because the offense up until these last two series has been struggling so mightily, and you got to find other ways to have Yiner. Yiner's not batting the game, not only Yiner, but you need to find Caratini a spot, and therefore he can catch. This makes it so much easier to do that and have a very potent lineup from 1 through 9, regardless of what you think of Jake, as opposed to those bottom three being just basically outs.
Yeah, it's you seen the lineup yet today?
I saw who's playing first base. I didn't see the full lineup.
Yeah, same outfield as yesterday. Chaz is in left, Dubon's in right. It's Altuve, Bregman, Yordan DHing. It's funny how Yordan plays all three games in left field at Fenway, and he plays DH all three games at the Trop. It's the turf.
It's the turf.
It is the turf. But it's just funny to look at. Yiner, Pena, DeZinzo, and then Myers, Dubon, McCormick. And again, Dubon, the strong arms and right. What took you so long to do this? But I'm glad that you had a stroke of genius. All right, 713-780-3776. Speaking of that lineup, Chaz is back out there. Chaz admittedly triggered me yesterday. Now, he did get a base hit.
Did he
earn the burn? How long can you keep rolling with Chaz? And if you can, do you continue once Tucker comes back, if he comes back? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Loaded, ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Chaz McCormick, yesterday we came up with the idea of the earn the burn thing. Like, if you're right now, you have no options in corner outfield. You didn't make a trade at the deadline to help that. So it's like, hey, play the hot hand. McCormick 1-for-4 yesterday. Now, he did trigger me because he was extremely lazy on that ground ball through the hole to the left side. He was lazy charging. He's got a noodle arm, and the dude took second base with ease, cost the Astros a run. It was the reason that they were trailing early in the game, was single-handedly Chaz McCormick's laziness. That bothered me. But he did have a knock. Had a knock in yesterday's game, so there is that. How long can you keep rolling with Chaz, Blinkers?
I think right now, Jeremy, it comes down to the fact that you're really in a tough situation until you decide if you want to try DeCenzo out there in left field. Because of the fact that you just are so limited with the guys that you can call on, Leon doesn't look like a guy that's going to give you much more. And I know they want to stay loyal to him, but it's getting harder and harder to watch. And you hear TK and Blummer talk about the fact that he's really pressing now, and he's really, you know, taking these at-bats hard when he's not getting on base. Well, we are too. And the fact is when we're starting to talk about the bottom of the lineup and just how putrid that it looks with those three guys at the bottom, there's something that you have to do as quick as you can, and that is once Tucker does come back, and if you can get DeCenzo as a guy that can play left field, that there's a guy that I'm going to throw out there more than Dubon and more than Chaz right away. And in the pecking order, I'm going to put Chaz probably behind Dubon, though I think they both have been awful, because I want that best offensive lineup out there. And I think that when that happens, I think a tough decision has to be made about sending him down. And everybody keeps talking about the fact that it's only a matter of time. He's going to find it. You know, we're eventually going to see, you know, the Chaz of old. And I know that Dana was on with the flagship today. And you know, that Dana said he believes in Chaz. He's 1 week away from turning the corner. He's frustrated right now. He may get hot in September and roll right into the postseason. Well, I don't want to take that chance right now. I mean, if the Astros get healthy, I don't want him anywhere near the starting lineup for this baseball team. And if he wants to go get right in Sugar Land and show a lot, then maybe we can have a conversation later on. But right now, I understand it's because of the need, but I just don't need to keep having him thrown out there if there's better options.
Yeah. I mean, Dana Brown's saying that's general manager talk. Like, that's cliche. Like, that's not actually something he believes. So, like, I'm not putting much weight in the general manager not, like, saying, oh, Chaz is terrible or giving up on him. He's not going to go on public airwaves and bash the guy. He's going to give him the vote of confidence. He says he's going to say we believe in him. I don't really put a whole lot of stock in that. Like, I take that for a grain of salt. Like, you can't bash the guy. And there's not better options right now. Like, I'm actually okay with Chaz McCormick getting a run of play until Kyle Tucker comes back. Now, I thought it was silly whenever they set him on the bench against a tough lefty. Dana Brown's like, oh, we got to get Chaz going. And then the next day he's playing against a tough righty. It's like, okay, well, you're not putting him in the best position to succeed. If you want him to succeed, play him against a mediocre lefty and then don't let him play against a tough righty. But I don't know that there's better options right now with this team. So I'm cool with the idea of letting Chaz play 75% of the games until Kyle Tucker comes back. Because what are your options right now in left and right?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if DeCenzo can get there, I love that option as a better option than Chaz. Leon's an option for me, but you know, the defensive play the other night bothers me. At least you know you're going to get good defense from both. You know, Dubon made a heck of a play last night. Chaz could play good defense. You know that he's not going to hurt you defensively with the exception of his arm. But, you know, the options suck right now in the outfield. Mm-hmm. So if DeCenzo becomes an option, whether he's platooning at first base or now if that becomes Yiner's job to platoon with Singleton at first base, that he can play left field, then there's one less option for me with Chaz. And then they can just take turns in right field. Or if Dubon is just the guy you're going to stick with in right, I'm fine with that because I understand he's pressing. But I think pressing doesn't make him play better at this point. I think it actually makes him play worse.
Yeah, he is pressing. That's why I'm like, hey, Chaz, you're going to be in the lineup almost every single day until Kyle Tucker comes back. That way you can see what you have. Because I don't mind them trying to find out if Chaz McCormick is capable. Because I don't need to see Mauricio Dubon in the lineup. Even if DeCenzo's playing left field, Jordan's DHing, well, you still have right field open. So there's no one that's just grabbing the playing time and like saying, this is mine. Like Pedro Leon hasn't done it. Mauricio Dubon has not done it. Jake Myers, if we're looking at it from just an offensive perspective, has not done it. John Singleton has not done it. Now, he might be your best option against righties. But no one's just grabbed the brass right ring and said, this final position or two while Tucker's out belongs to me. I think of the guys that we just mentioned, Chaz probably has the biggest upside. Chaz definitely has done it better than anybody else that of the guys we mentioned mm-hmm. at a major league level. Like no right. one can say they had an 800 OPS. No one can say they've homered over 20 times. So I'm actually okay with the Astros giving Chaz significant amount of starts until Kyle Tucker comes back. Because if Chaz McCormick's starting, who's he starting over? He's starting over Pedro Leon. He's done nothing. He's starting over Mauricio Dubon. He's been awful this summer. So it's not like he would be getting at bats over guys that I'm just clamoring to get in the lineup.
Yeah, because you're in a very compromised position and you got to keep throwing those guys out there for now, I get it. But, you know, again, the minute that Tucker is able to come back, I think it's if he's still hitting at 200 or below, that there's a real conversation that has to take place about a guy that maybe needs to just relax for a week or two, go down to Sugar Land and try and get right. And if he can, you know, feast on AAA pitching in the process too and get his confidence back, that would be a bonus.
Yeah.
Because you're right. He has played, of all of them, he's played and played well at a high level, including in the postseason. And that's a guy you want to believe that you can rely on. But right now, I just feel like that's a different Chaz McCormick, and he's somewhat broken mentally.
Yeah. I don't know if you send him down, though, right now. Like, to me, that's a move.
No, not until.
Yeah, because you have Aledmys Diaz still on this team. Texter saying Trey Cabbage might be a better option than Chaz at this point. I have no doubt that Cabbage is a better option against right-handed pitching than Chaz, and that's not saying a whole lot. Like, I don't think a whole lot of Cabbage. It's kind of silly, in my opinion, that Aledmys Diaz is on this team and not Cabbage, because it does limit Joe Espada playing the lefty-righty game. But the corner outfielders are all terrible. Like, all the guys we're mentioning are terrible. If Jordan's DHing and it's on turf and you don't have Kyle Tucker, Chaz has been terrible. Dubon has been terrible. Pedro Leon has been terrible. DeCenzo, they don't feel comfortable playing in left field yet. Now, they might do it whenever they come home to Minute Maid Park, which is a little bit of an easier left field to navigate, even though you have to play the tough angles. But even if DeCenzo is your left fielder, you still have to fill the position in right, and you don't have a good option there. So I'm okay with Chaz still being in the lineup routinely until Tucker comes back. Corey Chaz lollygagging to that ball and letting a single turn into a double bothered me. 5-7-9-8 after that lazy throw by Chaz that turned into a routine single into a double. I'd rather have Tucker out there with one leg. Yes, facts. I wouldn't have hated if Joe Espada put him on the bench. I would not have bothered me at all if Joe Espada said, Chaz, that's the effort. You're hitting what you're hitting. Like, if that's Jordan out there, okay, it's Jordan. He's the AL player of the week. It's Jordan. He's hitting, you know, breaking scoreboards. It's Jordan. He's one of the best offensive players in all of baseball. If Jordan's lollygagging, he's earned it because he's one of the best offensive players in all of baseball. Chaz McCormick, who's been putrid, and we're like, hey, this guy's not that far from a stint back to Sugarland. That's a dude with that effort that's performing that he is. That's when you sit that dude on the pine.
Oh, there's no doubt about
it. I would not have bothered me at all if Espada made that move.
You and I talked about this off air the day it happened, but Grisham did this for the Yankees this year when he was playing center field. And obviously it's a bigger, more critical media market. He got absolutely crushed. If you're just going to half-ass it, there's no place for that on this team. Yeah, you know what? That game wasn't in your back pocket. You weren't up 6-7 runs. You can't afford to be doing those kind of things because they can come back and bite you. I'm totally in favor of that. If Espada wanted to sit him down and say, that's not how we play baseball around here, I support that 100%.
713-780-3776. What is your plan, the corner outfield, as long as Kyle Tucker is gone, which might be a couple of weeks still? All right, what's CJ Stroud's best attribute? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word from my bookie. We know college football season's right around the corner, and pro football comes right after that. It is the best time of the year, and you can jumpstart the season with your future bets. You're going to start betting on who's going to win the NCAA championship. If you had Michigan last year at my bookie, you'd have cashed in 10 times your bet. How about this year? You like Georgia? You like the Horns? Maybe the Buckeyes? And then again, who's going to win it all in the NFL? Betting against the Texans, not a good thing, especially with the team that they have. But if you want to bet with your Texans, it's not crazy, and it could pay big. You can do all this and so much more at mybookie.ag. MyBookie's an awesome sports book and casino, and it puts you at the forefront of their concerns while it puts the betting in your hands. You can use your phone, your laptop. You don't have to fly to Vegas or drive to Louisiana. It's all right there at your fingertips in the courtesy and comfort of your own home, your car, wherever you may be. It's easy and it's fun. But remember this promo code that I'm going to give you that we always tell you to use. It's bet975. You listen to us, you use that code, you get paid. That's right. Whether you're re-upping an account and you've already been a customer at MyBookie or you're signing up for the first time, when they ask for that promo code bet975, you're going to find extra cash in your account up to $1,000 on your first deposit. And when you reload your account, it's phenomenal. More money in your account, more games you can bet on, more chances you can win. Let's have some fun this football season on MyBookie. It's the best online sports book and casino. And now you can go to MyBookie.ag, use our promo code BET975, and claim that bonus yet again. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Nacho saying that should have been an instant bench after that inning. At least when Pena is slumping, he's hustling both offensively by avoiding DPs and legging out infield singles and field choices and diving all over the place. That is true. Remember Pena had that moment, was it last year, where like he had a little tapper and didn't run hard to first base, and people killed him?
I think so.
I think it was last year. Could have been the year before, but I think it was last year. He had a little tapper. And they killed him. I wonder if that's the reason that he's playing with reckless abandon this year. Maybe.
Boy, did you hold your breath a little bit, the head first slide to first? I was watching what Candy hit the bag with going, man, right now we can't have Pena miss any time.
A little more acceptable when there's nobody on first base because you can kind of potentially avoid a tag. But I'm usually not a fan of diving into first base almost ever. Only time I'm in favor of it is whenever you see the first baseman jump. Like, if you see the first baseman leave his feet, get down, because he might be able to catch it and tag you. So get down. Like, get out of his range. 713-780-3776. HRP listener line, 713-780-ESPN. What is C.J. Stroud's best attribute?
To me, I think the best attribute he has is just his ability to make decisions in the pocket. I think that just what you've seen so far and what we've seen in the past with guys that have played the position specifically here in Houston, I just love the fact that, you know, he's such a smart football IQ, but he knows what to do with the football. He doesn't try to do too much with his legs. And his decision making to me in reading the defense and making the right read, I just love.
Yeah, I think he's really good at reading defenses pre-snap. I think he's really good at seeing the defense, and I think his anticipation's fantastic. I think he's really good with the mental aspect of it. I think his leadership is fantastic. I listed like 6 or 7 different attributes, but that's because he's one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. Off the field, I think his leadership is fantastic. Anticipations, especially in zone defenses, like throwing the ball into the window, like we saw a ton last year, was fantastic.
The preseason game, the tank.
Yeah, like you saw a lot early last year, like the quarterback school guy, like he was doing a C.J. Stroud breakdown each and every week because he was falling in love with C.J. Stroud, and his thing was anticipation, man. Can see what the defense is doing, anticipate the throw, and then deliver. And we didn't even mention accuracy. And accuracy might be his best attribute. Like, the anticipation plus the accuracy makes him pretty lethal. Chase Daniel did a bunch of film studies with Stroud, too, and he talked about the anticipation. So the experts that break down ball would all tell you anticipation. But then I think you need the accuracy on top of the anticipation. Like, if you're really good at anticipating what your guy's going to do versus what the defense is going to do, you also have to have the ability to then go deliver the ball to what you're anticipating. So I think it's a combination of the two. If you don't have that accuracy, but you have the anticipation, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If right. you throw the ball like Anthony Richardson,
yeah.
well, cool, you have the anticipation, but you can't use the anticipation to your favor because you don't deliver the ball where it needs to be.
Yeah, I think that when you look at it, you know, you asked me for his best attribute. I think there are so many good ones, and I think that's where I would start. But the good thing is that you wouldn't finish for quite a while in your discussion because of the fact that, you know, if you want to say he's not a great running quarterback, I'm fine with that because he doesn't need to be. And we've seen more times than not, especially when the Texans have had a running quarterback. Now, there's obviously good ones in the league that do it very well, and you start with Lamar and Josh Allen. But when you look at a guy like C.J. Stroud, the fact is we know what happened when Deshaun decided to extend so many plays with his legs, and he took a beating, and a lot of times he turned the ball over, and it wasn't a successful play. The intelligence that C.J. has is the way he kind of translates it to the football field. And he doesn't have to run. He will run. He's capable of running, but he finds the open receiver that's going to make sense for him or makes the decision without having to put himself in harm's way by running too much.
Yeah, I don't really want my quarterback to run, quite frankly, because I think it does make him prone to injury, and I don't want my starting quarterback hurt. So I don't mind that Stroud's not a running quarterback. Yeah, he can get you 6-7 yards if it's there. I think he's really good at extending plays, though. I think he's got really good footwork. Like Brady was not athletic. Brady was slow and unathletic, but he had amazing footwork. Mm-hmm. His footwork in the pocket was immaculate. It was the best ever. And he's not, I mean, he wasn't fast. He wasn't quick. He wasn't agile, but he had unbelievable footwork. And I think Stroud's a little bit like that. Like, if you're just going pure athlete at the quarterback position, Stroud's probably middle of the pack.
Yeah.
But he's really good with his fundamentals. He's really good with the footwork. He's really good at anticipating where, like, the blitz is coming from, the rush is coming from, and extending plays. He did it a lot in the Georgia game, quite frankly, in the college football playoffs.
Yeah, and when you look at, and you mentioned Brady, but Brady was a guy, we talked about Bregman with his tinkering, but Brady was a guy that was constantly trying to redefine his mechanics and trying to redefine, especially as he got older too, what he did with his footwork, with his mechanics, his arm delivery, the kind of things, the way he anticipated plays so that he continued to stay at a very high level. I have no problem believing CJ's the same kind of guy because you can already tell CJ knows when to step up, when to step out. He knows that, you know, at a certain time, look, if the defense is going to lay off and they're really focused on him trying to put the ball in the flat or, you know, make that read, he will use his legs, but he also is smart enough to get down. He's not going to take the hits we've seen Will Levis take. He's not going to make the decisions Deshaun would make. And that's why he's such a total package in so many ways. You know, when he came out, his ball placement, his accuracy is fantastic, too. And I don't think that sometimes gets enough credit. But I think the one thing where the knock was he didn't have a strong arm. But at the same time, he can make all the throws. You don't have to have the cannon that could throw it out of the end zone. You just have to have a guy that can make all the throws and put the ball where it needs to be. And I have no problem believing that he's that guy. For you know, no matter what team you put him on, he's going to be that guy.
Yeah, I think he has plenty strong of an arm. I think it's above average. I wouldn't put it like top 10, but I would have his arm above average, his arm strength for Stroud.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, if you talk about the strongest arms in the league, it's probably Josh Allen's in that category. You know, there's guys that just can wind up and let it fly, the old Brett Favre style.
Yeah.
But Brett Favre was also inaccurate a lot of times, too, which is where I don't think that CJ's the same kind of quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I say this all the time. I think arm strength is one of the most overrated attributes a quarterback can possess. It's good to have it. It's like if you had everything else, like give me the strong arm versus like a mediocre arm. But I would have arm strength like seventh or eighth, most important. Now, Dan Orlovsky had a top 10 for different quarterback attributes. And like Stroud's not in his top 10 for arm strength. His top 10 on arm strength, Mahomes, Allen, Herbert, Stafford, Rodgers, Levis, Mayfield, Anthony Richardson, Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson. I don't think Mahomes has a stronger arm than Allen. I would have Allen number one, honestly. I think he has a bigger arm. I think he's got a bigger like fastball. I think he would throw the ball further. I actually think Anthony Richardson would, too. Anthony Richardson might be number one for me.
I think Josh Allen's one for me, and I think that Mahomes, he can wind up and he can throw it a long way.
Further than Allen?
That's where I would
That's
say.
That's why I flip him. Mahomes isn't one for me.
I would have fun checking to see who would have a stronger arm.
I would like to watch that competition.
Yeah.
I think Mahomes could win that.
I don't.
Especially with the baseball background.
I was just going to say the old man.
Not only can he throw it super far, I mean, I think we'd all probably have him at worst, second?
No. I think I would have him. Are we talking about throwing the ball the furthest, or are we talking about, like, miles per hour? Like, are we talking about heater?
I would say furthest.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking furthest, like on a deep route or something like that, or being able to just absolutely unload
stand at the
and get
20,
it there.
How far can you throw?
I think both matter. I think both characteristics matter.
Yeah, I don't think they're always the same. I don't think they're always equal. Like I really don't.
Because to your point earlier, that's where as long as you can make all the throws, you don't have to have a quote unquote cannon, but you do have to throw that out route from the other hash mark where you have got to put something on it to make sure that you beat the corner.
I would say Allen has a bigger arm than Mahomes. Just purely throwing the ball further. I think Allen would. I think Justin Herbert would. I'm not sure Matthew Stafford would anymore.
I don't remember Mahomes ever underthrowing Tyreek Hill, and that's the fastest man alive, according to Tyreek Hill.
I'm not sure that Justin Herbert would either, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I think we're talking about the top arms in the world. Like it sounds like I'm like saying Mahomes has a noodle. Like it sounds like I'm saying Mahomes is Chaz McCormick. I'm saying Mahomes has the fifth strongest arm in the entire world.
Fifth? So okay.
Well, I'm just throwing an arbitrary number out there.
Who else?
But I would have Allen ahead of him. I would have Herbert ahead of him. I wouldn't have Stafford anymore. Maybe Stafford in his peak.
In his prime.
Maybe.
Sure.
Same thing with Rodgers. Rodgers not anymore. Maybe in his peak, but not anymore. Will Levis has a stronger arm. Like, if we're, again,
yeah,
we're just talking pure arm strength, Levis does. I wouldn't go Baker. I would go Anthony Richardson. And that's probably it. So those are the four I would have ahead of Mahomes. Purely arm strength. Like, I think that Pat Mahomes is the greatest quarterback talent we've ever seen. Let's be very clear, because it sounds like I'm talking down about Pat Mahomes. I'm not. I'm talking about one very specific attribute that I think's overrated. I think this attribute's overrated, because I do think Mahomes is the greatest quarterback product we've ever seen. But in terms of pure arm strength, throwing the ball the furthest, yeah, I have them fifth after those four.
Maybe if you have all these guys in a perfect pocket with their feet planted, you're right.
Yeah.
I do think where that I would give Mahomes the tiebreaker is if you put any of them off platform, I think Mahomes keeps more of his throwing power than these other guys.
I would completely agree.
Yeah.
Completely.
Because he can throw that kind of sidearm baseball pitcher throw and put something on it, too, which is so hard to do.
Yep.
So I agree with that. Off-script plays, there's no doubt. Yeah, he would be one, and I think he'd be by a pretty big margin.
Maybe Allen could be up there, but yeah, top two, top three there.
And Rodgers was that guy in his prime, but...
See, I think Mahomes and Rodgers have a lot of similarities, actually.
Very much so.
I agree, but I think where I would say to you, I don't disagree by moving Rodgers down that much, but I got to see him this year. Because if he recovers from that injury, he just has that rare ability to have the power to make every throw. But when he needs to, he can throw it as far as just about anybody. But at his age, I don't know what he's got left in the tank anymore.
Yeah. Ball placement, Orlovsky ranks Burrow 1, 2, which I think is outrageous.
I can't believe that.
Mahomes 3, Stafford 4, Stroud is 5th, Brock Purdy 6, Geno 7, Dak 8, Goff 9, Josh Allen 10. I would have Allen outside of the top 10. I don't like Tua in my top two.
No.
I would move Stroud into the top four.
I would certainly move him ahead of Tua.
Yeah.
Just throw it up and let Waddle and Tyreek run underneath. That's all Tua's doing.
Over Stafford, I can't. Over Mahomes, Over Burrow, But I would definitely have Stroud top four. I would move down Tua.
Yeah, Tua to me was the biggest glaring, like, what the hell are you doing putting him this high? I just think that, you know, you've got two absolute speed demons on the outside for you. And you know that he doesn't have the strongest arm. But I don't think by any means that he places a football better than some of the guys that he had Tua above. And I think that the other overriding theme in all of this is that Dan Orlovsky used to back up Matthew Stafford. He has some massive amounts of love for Matthew Stafford. Maybe Matthew Stafford in his prime deserved to be this high in a lot of these categories. Right now in his career, I had a hard time putting Matt Stafford ahead of a lot of these young quarterbacks and what they're still capable of doing.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Stafford's is your favorite player's favorite player, though.
Caleb Williams.
We talked about the off-platform. I don't think Stafford gets enough credit for that because you see some of the highlight videos of him, and he's just as capable with the sidearm, the drop-down, the three-quarters running and throwing the no-look. Stafford obviously lost a little bit of his prime athletically, but he can complete just as many amazing style of passes as some of these other guys.
Mechanics, they have Burrow 1, Stafford 2, Herbert 3, Stroud 4, Dak 5, Goff 6, Tua 7, Rodgers 8, Brock 9, Lawrence 10. I have no problem where Stroud's at there. I think that's a really good, respectful ranking.
Four? I think that's great.
He's 4 behind Burrow, Stafford, and Herbert.
Yeah, no problem. I think he's fine there. I think the rest of the list, a little to me, and it goes to what you were saying too, Brian, I think that if you're going to say that about Stafford, I've just seen too many of them to know that Rodgers is a guy that off script, running, whatever the arm angle, puts a ball. I go back to that Dallas game in the playoffs to get the field goal to win the game. He had no business making that throw and making it as accurate as he did off script at the distance that he threw it. I think, again, if he's still got anything left in the tank, that's a guy that probably is higher than Goff, at least.
It's interesting that Mahomes isn't on the top 10 of mechanics, but he's not really known for his mechanics.
No, he's not.
A lot of people criticize his mechanics.
I think he intentionally doesn't have the mechanics. It adds to some of the deceptiveness.
Decision-making with the football, Rodgers 1, Stafford 2, Burrow 3, Stroud 4, Purdy 5, Love 6, Mahomes 7, Dak 8, Goff 9, Cousins 10.
I don't have Rodgers 1. I think that as he's gotten older in his career,
I can't figure out if you love or hate Rodgers.
I'm just honest about Rodgers. I think that watching him as much as I have, he's dominated the offensive coordinator. He makes every play his own. And I think that later in his career especially, he has made the wrong read a lot of times and left guys that are wide open trying to get more or to try to do too much. And that's why I wouldn't have him one on this list. I like where CJ's at here, and I think CJ can actually go up on this list as he goes longer into his career. But I think it's very respectful to have him where he is right now.
Yeah. Now, that comment on Rodgers, though, is that mostly post Devontae Adams? Because, I mean, last year in Green Bay, he had at wide receiver? There wasn't a lot there. It was a bunch of young guys and journeymen like Marquez Valdez-Scantling. So
you guys need a Rodgers podcast.
I just don't put a lot of – I get he made bad decisions, but he might be forced into making something happen because he wasn't working with a lot of wide receiver.
No, it was towards the end, if not after Adams, but at the same time, there were guys wide open in the flat where you would have gotten a first down and moved the sticks and been able to keep going, and instead he tried to play hero ball too much, or he thought that the other guy was the guy that he wanted to throw to, and it cost them drives, it cost them games, it cost them making the playoffs. And I think it was different.
Is this ESPN New York or ESPN Green Bay right now? Which of these two is it? Pocket presence, Mahomes 1, Burrow 2, Stroud 3, Stafford 4, Lamar 5, Brock 6, Love 7, Allen 8, Geno 9, and then Dak 10.
Yeah, I question, is Purdy that high already?
I think Purdy's great. I think pocket he's the most underrated quarterback in the NFL.
I thought that was a little high on him. Geno shouldn't be on this list. Again, extremely respectful of CJ for only going into year two to be that high on the list, but I was great with where he was.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Behind Mahomes, Burrow, I have no problem with him being behind those two guys. And I don't really see anybody under him that should jump him. And then last one, rushing ability. Lamar 1, Allen 2, Richardson 3, Hurts 4, Fields 5, Mahomes 6, interest me. Dak 7, Burrow 8, Murray 9, Lawrence 10.
Yeah,
too low.
I think so, too.
Kyler's way too low.
I would have him.
I'd have him ahead of Dak.
I would have him in the top six. I would have him top six. Now, behind Fields, Hurts, Richardson, Allen, Jackson's fine. Sure. I would have Murray 6.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, again, we're good with him not being on this list, but when you're talking about the guys on the list, to me, I think about Lamar, I think about Hurts, because the Hurts is so dominant when he runs the football that it's hard to beat him besides a guy like Lamar. But, yeah, there's a couple of Justin Fields, that's all he can do.
Yeah, if I could nitpick it, I might move Hurts and Fields above Richardson, because Richardson hadn't really showed it a whole lot because he was hurt. And I might move Fields above Hurts. I might move Fields to three. But I have no problem that Stroud's outside of the top 10. Like, he doesn't run much.
Agreed.
He doesn't run much.
I think to me, to have the Fields even there on that list, it's all he can do. It's fine. But I'm not a big fan of his. Yes, he's got a big body. He can run a little bit. But that to me, I'm like, I'm not even sure he should be on the list, because I'm not sure he's a starting quarterback. So why are we?
I mean, he did have a season where he ran for like 1,100 yards, though.
He did.
Man, he might be the starting quarterback. He was catching some balls from Russell Wilson today. Maybe they use him like Cordell Stewart. I hope that they do.
He's playing slash.
Throwback
slash.
Cordell. Wouldn't it be awesome? Like, they're talking about him returning kicks in the offseason, which I think that was
baloney. What's the guy that did it after him? Antoine L?
Antoine Randall L.
Antoine Randall L.
Indiana. Quarterback.
Yep, he did quarterback at Indiana.
Yeah. Hoosiers, QB1. All right, 713-780-3776. What do you think C.J. Stroud's best attribute is? And is Stephon Diggs the biggest diva in the NFL? Some think so. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
KFNC and 97.9 HD2 Mont Bellevue, Houston. Presented by Zadok Jewelers.